Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the first day of reInvent 2018. We wanted to thank you for being here. We know you have a lot of choices for all the different talks that we have, and we appreciate you spending the next hour with us. Mike, Diego, and I are really excited to be here for two main reasons. The first being the nature of the problem that we're trying to solve here and share that story with you. And the second being, this is the first time Activision Blizzard has actually spoken at reInvent. So I'm really excited to be here. So the problem that we're trying to solve is actually pretty pervasive in the gaming industry. If you're in the gaming industry, you're probably aware of user acquisition and user retention, which is quickly becoming a challenge as more and more game titles come out and you're looking to absorb the attention of your customers. It is commanding bigger and bigger budgets every year, and it is becoming an industry unto itself. So this is where the Call of Duty coach comes in. We are here to talk about a novel approach to user retention and the creativity that can enable unique experiences for your end customers and gamers. Before we get started, a quick introduction. My name is Dhruv Tukral. I've been with Amazon Web Services for a little under 5 years. This is actually my fifth reInvent, and I've spoken in each and every one of them. The crowd sizes just keep getting bigger and bigger, which is awesome. Also means a little bit more scary on my end as a speaker. When I first started, we had 60 people in my first talk. But we really appreciate you being here. I started my career as a gaming solutions architect, which meant that I worked with gaming companies across all of North America, and I've done a few talks. You might have attended them, you might not have. But this year, I started focusing on Activision Blizzard, mainly because of the nature of the workloads and the cool things that they're trying to solve, this being one of them. So just wanted to give you a quick overview of the agenda. We'll start with some introductions, and then we will quickly dive into the business requirements that drove this project. We will then focus on the meaty parts of this presentation. We'll go over the architecture and how Alexa fits into this whole solution space. We will talk about the various obstacles that we faced and the different lessons learned. Some of these will definitely be applicable to you if you're trying to replicate this experience. And then finally, we will bookend this talk with what the future looks like. And then we want to share some resources with the audience here. If you want to replicate this experience for your customers, those resources will come in handy. So with that being said, I'm going to hand over the stage to Mike and Diego.
Thanks, Dhruv. My name is Mike Blesky. I am Senior Manager of DevOps in part of the Activision Blizzard Marketing Technology Group. I'm joined today with Diego Toledo. He is Associate Software Architect for the same group. And between us, we have 14, I think, plus titles of Activision between us. So we've kind of been around the block. We've kind of seen all the Call of Duties and been around the block quite a bit. I think most of you might be familiar with Call of Duty. We feel like it really doesn't need any introduction. However, we kind of wanted to make sure everybody was aware of the product that we work on. So without further ado, I want to show a trailer of our Call of Duty World War II.
This day of set upon a mighty endeavor. Souls will be shaken with the violences of war. In this hour of great sacrifice, we shall prevail.
Get your head down and keep moving!
We are all that separates the world from darkness. The enemy is ruthless. We cannot, we must not fail.
Duty first.
Perez! Won't be enough for you!
Casualties.
We executed the mission.
Get me the fuck out of here.
How many?
We had orders.
Get to cover.
Lieutenant,
Tell them what we're all about.
No mission too difficult. No sacrifice too great.
Welcome to the Bloody First. You're a long way from Texas, farm boy.
So that was last November.
Get access to the private beta.
So that was Call of Duty World War II. That was last year's title. November 3rd was last year. So I've been a gamer my whole life, from number munchers and getting dysentery on Oregon Trail on the Apple IIe's. And now I get the privilege of working on the latest Call of Duties. The main question I get asked a lot is, what exactly is Activision Blizzard? You see Activision all over, you hear Activision Blizzard, but what exactly does that mean? We are a part of a big family, Activision Blizzard, and now it includes King. Activision Publishing, we are responsible for Call of Duty. Our most recent one is Black Ops 4, and the Alexa skill is based upon World War II, which is last year's title. Blizzard, World of Warcraft, Overwatch, and then King, Candy Crush, Farm Hero Saga. I'm sure all of you have one of those on your phones right as we speak. Diego and I specifically work for the marketing technology group within Activision Publishing. And what we do is we work on a few key platforms within the environments. We do the CallofDuty.com, Activision.com main websites, the MyCallofDuty.com portal. We now have a mobile companion app. We do the in-game messaging platform. We work on the ETL layer for doing email campaigns. And of course, what we're here today, the Call of Duty Alexa skill. So first, I want to kind of go over an overview of what our architecture looked like before we started this journey. To kind of give you an idea of what we did with our data and how we worked with it to begin with. So it all starts with our central data services event pipeline. The game event emits massive amounts of data, and our central data services group collects that and gives us and feeds us a nice little pipe so we could kind of listen into those events and do what we will with them. We have Python-based pipeline readers that actually, there's many of them stacked together, and we read that real-time data, and we insert that into a distributed NoSQL data mart. From there, we have a REST-based API endpoint that delivers the content to MyCallofDuty.com. If you're not familiar with MyCallofDuty.com, I'm not sure if you are or not, but it basically, it's a portal that allows you to sign up for an Activision account. You can log in and view all of your stats, all of your top-level stats, such as kill-death ratio, wins, losses. You get a weekly recap, as well as you can have there's a little text snippet of a natural language-generated content that's different for every single Call of Duty user. So with that, we just saw the trailer for the actual campaign for World War II, but our skill is based around the multiplayer experience. So what does the multiplayer experience look like? Well, here's another trailer of our multiplayer World War II.
Thank you.
might get access to the private beta.
Okay, thank you, Mike. So what you guys saw now was the this trailer has like a mix of like cinematics and some gameplay there. Multiplayer can be really intense. There was a lot of stuff going on around you right there, as you could see. The multiplayer is playing in game modes. Different game modes have different goals. So for example, it all boils down to having two teams. You're in one of the team, you need to defeat the other team. So some game modes, you can do something like capture the flag or protect the flag. You can be plant a bomb or defuse a bomb. You could conquer territory or defend a territory. Or some game modes do not even have a team at all. It's a free-for-all, like you just need to be the last guy standing. So before you join a match, typically you choose your loadout. And your loadout, it's your primary weapon, your secondary weapon. You're going to need to choose a list of attachments to complement your weapons. And an attachment could be something like a scope, a grip, a silencer. And then after that, you need to choose two pieces of equipment. So usually it's like an equipment, an explosive and a flashbang, like a tactical type of weapon. And you have the division and the basic training. So the division, it, you can think of as like your character. They're like, each division has like some are better in doing certain things than others. So for example, one division is better at taking damage from explosives. Another division is good in, is more like in stealth mode. And the basic training gives you like a special ability. So you want to complement your character with some special skill. So you can do something like to scramble the radar from one of your enemies, or you can increase your radar. So there are many different things. So going, if you want to be a better player in Call of Duty, it's really time consuming to go through all the possible iterations of all the attachments, of all the weapons. And you don't have time to explore all possibilities. So that's why it was a problem that we identified right there. So we need a coach, right? So our goal is, we know that from data that Call of Duty is easy to understand but hard to master. You guys understood they have like two teams, goes against each other, but get there and actually succeed is really hard. We know from data that different people do better than other people, right? So we need to find out what's going on there. So usually there's a steep curve for you to get better in Call of Duty. And when you wanted to go through the steep curve, a lot of people dropped through that. Usually things like this are solved by creating one of those, here are the top five ways for you to get better in Call of Duty. Here are the top five loadouts before you're joining a match. But we were aiming to do something personalized. So we want every single person to have their personalized Call of Duty coach. We didn't want to have something generic. We wanted to have like your top five list. Again, easy to understand, but hard to master. So what does a Call of Duty coach sound like, right? If you ask a player, what is expecting, if Activision wants to release a skill in Alexa, what is being expected from Activision whenever we have like a Call of Duty skill? And we want to drive engagement. And in this case, we want people to get better and go through the learning curve as soon as possible. So how do we do that? How do we deliver this content? People want to know what loadout to use and if they're using the optimal loadout. A lot of people just choose two or three combinations of loadout. They don't explore much more than that, and they try to become really good in this one loadout. And most of the time, it's not the optimal loadout. And what kind of feedback? So people do play with their friends, and sometimes you have a friend coaching you. So what type of feedback does your friend give to you? What type of feedback you give to your friends? Do you give like a tactical feedback? Do you give like encouragement? And there's, when you have like so much to improve from, like how do you sort what is more important? What type of advice are more important? So there's a lot of moving parts here. And this was like an idea that was floating around our company for a while. And we always just let it go because all sounded like too impossible because we couldn't find a way to really put everything together in a concise way, something that it could deliver like to our standards. Just think for a moment that we could deliver a machine learned model that could give you a personalized recommendation to you. And also, just think for a moment that we do have a content team that can generate content to you about Call of Duty. there's still the problem that Call of Duty is a game that's always evolving. There's always new weapons being included in the game. The stats of the weapons are changing. There are new maps being added. So it's like a moving target for you to shoot. And if you're going to deliver a coach like that, what channel should we use? So like, where is this thing going to live? Where would it feel like natural for the users to use this coach? And finally, there's the whole heavy lifting. Like, for example, if you want to make like a voice interface, if you didn't have Alexa, let's say, you would have to spend like 6 months just developing the tech so you could start a prototype, right? This is like a huge commitment right there. So you want something that was right there up for grabs. So some of our early ideas right there. Chatbot, website, in-game. Everything comes down to, we want our users to continue to play Call of Duty. If we put our content, if we put our coach in a website or an app somewhere else, we're going to make the user drop the joystick and go somewhere else to look for this content. And once you are somewhere else, you're like looking at your emails, your notifications, social media, and you're gone. So we want to increase engagement. We want to create something that is going to make people drop Call of Duty and do something else. And like Mike said, we're part of marketing tech. We're not part of studio. So this is not something that we could just put inside of the game. So this is something very experimental. We wanted something that we could in parallel and complement the game. So why Alexa? Why did we pick Alexa in the end? So whenever we had this idea floating, whenever I was pitching this idea to people in the office, people would come to me like, hey, you have this coach, this is great. Why don't you just put this coach on a website or a mobile app and call it a day? Why does it have to go in Alexa? It's just that by talking to a brand, it allows a degree of immersion in the game that is not possible on a website. Just think about it. You're playing the game, and you're talking to Call of Duty as it's happening, as if there was somebody, as if it was somebody in the living room with you right there. It gives like a second screen-like experience without putting down the controller. So it could be there holding the controller and getting some feedback about something specific about the game. And again, we want it to feel like a mentor or a buddy sitting next to you. People do play with friends, so we want to always have this feeling with like the Call of Duty was this guy beside you in the couch. So we decided we could do it. This time we could do it. The time was right. So we could deliver this thing. First, I'm going to show you guys how the final product looks like right now. It's just going to help you guys to put everything together in your head as we go to the next few slides, especially the more technical ones. So yeah, it's going to help. So we published three trailers for the release, and they're all on YouTube. You guys should watch. They're really funny. But we wanted to show those trailers for this presentation, but we had to make some last-minute changes. Long story short, we have to remove the actors from the video. But Mike and I, we are software engineers from LA, and being a software engineer in LA, acting is part of your skill set, right? So I'm going to be doing the lines of the trailer. So right now, think of, I'm a player. I'm in my living room. I'm playing Call of Duty. I just had a very bad match. Now, I'm going to look for Call of Duty and ask for a piece of advice so I can improve the game, my game, so when the next match starts, I know what to do. Alexa, how did I do in my last match?
Let me break it down for you. You got clobbered. You were in last place on your team, and you collected a score of 25.
How do I improve my skills?
Use a grip to reduce recoil and help improve accuracy. Try Hustle for your basic training perk, and arm yourself with a lethal like a satchel chart.
What division should I use?
Now you're asking the right question, soldier. The ideal division for you is airborne.
Okay, let's get back to that. Okay. So here is the end of match. This is the lobby. So whenever a match ends, this is where you go. So this is the screen that you're going to see there for like about like 15 to 20 seconds, and that's when the next that you're waiting for the next match to load. Now, those three guys in the screen, those are the top three guys from the previous match. Now, you want to be those three guys, because they get to stay there and brag and do some cool moves while the next match is loading. So you don't want to be the guy watching them. You want to be those three guys. So whenever we design the coaching part of the skill, we want it to be used in this screen, because you just had a bad match, and you look at those three guys, you're pissed, and you want to get an advice on how to get there next time. Of course, like the skill does much more than that in the end, but we think that's our MVP. That's who did most of the work. So this is the skill builder. This is something that make our confidence level go way up that we could deliver this thing. That's the what I said before, that all the tech was already there for us to design like a voice interface. This is how our look right now. On the left, you guys see the intents. So the intents are like your API paths. So they are the type of things that can be triggered. On the right, you see the examples that are going to trigger a certain intent. So for example, right now you have friends compare selected. So if somebody say friend stats, my stats, and my friends, those are examples of things that are going to trigger the friends compare intent. So you're going to receive like a request in your backend with the type friends compare, and you need to handle that now. Now, you may have noticed there are some colored words right there. So for example, if we have, let's say we have a stat for getting your stats, or get a call to get your stats. Let's say it's just unfeasible to write every single combination of like, what is my accuracy? How many kills do I have? What is my blah, blah, blah? So to solve this problem, you create those lots. And those lots are like white lists. So you put all your stats in those lots. So you just write it once in the example side on the right. What is my stat list? So you have right there like 100 examples for all those possible stats that you have. And this also makes really easy to manage later, because whenever you add a new stat in the game or add something new in the list, it's just going to reflect everywhere in your code there. So we have the skill builder, we have Alexa, we think we're good to go, we think we have like all the pieces, we think like this time this idea is gonna happen. But again, now that we have the tech, we need to decide how this thing is gonna look like, what we're gonna actually build, right? We need to show people in the office an MVP, something so people can get excited about. So the goals for our prototype was, we need to have like an onboarding experience first, because voice interfaces are really new to most people. And it's really intimidating if you think about it, to have like this device in front of you and it doesn't react, and there's no screen, there's no menu. So you don't know what you can say. You don't know what is allowed to say to this device. So you need to have like an onboarding experience that you just go through what is available for you. We need to show the magic of fetching data in real time. So you just play the match, and you just go to this device on the side and ask something about that just happened in the screen, and people would be just like, wow, like, how did you guys tie those things together? So we had to show this to people. And we had to build like a machine learning model to coach those players, right? Because that's the whole point. We want everybody to get a personalized recommendation in the end of their match. We didn't want to have something generic. And finally, getting people in the office excited. So find out who needs to be looped in this project, because you need more people to get this thing to be ready in production to be released. So the multiplayer had a lot of moving parts, like I said. So this is like a overall how we solve that problem. So, spoiler alert, we have a database with all the matches ever played. So we can look at this database and see that some people do better, some people do worse, and we can just feed in a bunch of models to try to learn what, and try to contrast, also see like what can we do to make you better when you compare you to these other people that are much better than you. So the blues here in the slides are data, community data and user data. The greens are models, of course. So in here you see community data being fed into the skill model and the playstyle model, and the output of those two models together with the user data, they go inside the recommendations model, and that's what you see in the end, for example, that's what you heard the device say in the end. So what you're aiming here is, what is the smallest piece of advice that I can give to you that is gonna have the biggest impact in your game, right? We don't want, if you're a player that likes to save a sniper, we don't want it to go and do something like, okay, the number one player in the world likes to run around with a shotgun. Here we go, you're gonna have a shotgun and you're gonna run around like this guy now. We want you to stay within your play style and want to, so you want it to improve within your comfort zone. So you wanna find something that we're gonna change a little bit and it's gonna have a huge improvement in your game. So input data. User data is real time. So that is the what just happened. The match just ended, and now you're asking something about this match. So we could finish a match and ask right away, what was my accuracy in that match? Or what is my lifetime accuracy? Lifetime number of shots. You can ask all of that. Facts and milestones are things that we keep track of for the players. They're like counters. Things like, for example, number of matches that you've ever played. Did you play the previous Call of Duty games? Did you finish the single player campaign? So we keep track of all of that. And as you're doing, you're updating your profile there. Community data is historical. We just have too many players, and they generate too much data. So we cannot just make a community aggregation every time somebody makes a question. I don't think we don't even need that. So we just make those batches that we just aggregate a bunch of community data. And we do this for a window of time, right? Because remember that the game is always changing, so you always want to stay relevant. So we need to find like a sweet spot that you have enough data, enough days that you can see some patterns emerging from your data, but at the same time, because the game is always changing, you don't want some old data making your recommendations irrelevant. All of our benchmarks, all of our aggregations are done per map and per mode. I'm gonna go in deeper that later. And our sweet spot was weekly. But this thing is always a little bit moving up and down depending on like what happened in the game. Okay. So the model, so the skill model. Skill model does a lot of things, but basically answers how good are you? We have a number, 1, 2, 3, 4. And we just, the bigger the number, better you are. One example that where we use this is how we talk to you. So if you are like a number one, not so good player, beginner, and you had a bad match, we're gonna be nicer to you, right? If you're like a number four and you had a very bad match, we're gonna be nasty because you can take it. And we use this in different places also, but that was like an interesting use of the skill model. There's also the play style model. So the playstyle model, like to point out, that is not a class. This is not a classification algorithm, but it's a continuous value. So what do we mean about that? You can go and say, oh yeah, there's 5 different ways or 7 different ways that you can play Call of Duty. But what happens now is that you're gonna have only 5 or 7 different types of recommendations, and you don't wanna bucket all the people in those 5 buckets, right? You wanna have like a big diversity of recommendations. So for example, we have a player that likes to snipe, engage from long distance, but he's a camper. He likes to stay in the corner, he never moves. And have the second player that also likes to engage from distance. We could call him a sniper, but he has these 3 locations that he's always rotating and moving the map. So every time he kills somebody, he shoots somebody, he escapes and moves to the next location. Now, in the previous model, those 2 guys would be called snipers, and boom. They would get the same recommendation. In this continuous value model, they would get similar recommendation, but not exactly the same recommendation. So that's the ideal for us, because everybody is a little bit of everything. All of recommendations are based on map and mode, style and skill. So focus on map and mode. Different modes, like I said, demand different type of skills. Right? You can do something like it's a free-for-all, or you can do like a catch-up your flag. So it depends like very different type of skills. So the stats, the benchmarks, everything for the model, they're gonna look very different. But also if you think of the map, the maps are very different between them too. So you can have like a map that is wide open and be sniper's paradise, or something that is like really close counters and people running around with shotgun do better than others. Also, the same map across different game modes, they also look very different. Because, for example, you can have a map that you need to control a certain part of the map, like a control game. So people's movement pattern are going to be very different than, for example, the same map where you play a free-for-all that everybody's by themselves, and you could be basically go anywhere. So that's why every single model that we do is per game mode and per for every combination of mode and map. So challenges. Game is rebalancing, and new features are being added. So having that rolling window is not enough, because sometimes you have like some big metagame changes too. So the division systems were changed dramatically in the middle of the life game cycle. So for example, being an airborne division changed dramatically in the middle of the life of the game. Like new perks, sometimes perks stats get changed, sometimes a perk get added, and this perk is there to counter some other old perk. So these dynamics are always changing, and players are changing together, and they are very fast in adapt to all those changes. So you want to be able to reflect all those changes. So as soon as something like this go live, you need to adapt, and you don't want your recommendation to just become old, you know? Okay. So we have all those pieces together. We build something that works, but right now all of that was working on my computer, on my laptop. Now is the part that how we make this production level. And yeah. Here you need to answer some questions, like, for example, how to avoid repetitive responses. So whenever somebody asks, what is my accuracy, you don't want to say every single time, your accuracy is 0.5, your accuracy is 0.5, because it just sounds repetitive and it just starts hurting in your ear. So you want to have some variation of how you answer that question. How many and what intents, and how much content to support? Now we have like many Call of Duty games. We could literally just try to support every single game, every single character, every single weapon. But that would be like too much to maintain, right? We need something feasible that we can launch and maintain after, because this is gonna be like a live service type of situation. So we need to know like what are we gonna support. Content, custom MP3 on demand. So if you guys noticed from the trailer, that was not Alexa's voice. So nothing against Alexa, but we wanted to find like a more like a stronger male voice that better fits the Call of Duty brand. So we were looking for something to deliver MP3 generation on demand, something that we just send text and we get MP3, so something that is wouldn't cost us tons of money, and we'll be able to scale, because as soon as you ask something to the Alexa, to the Echo Spot, you want the answer to come right away. You don't have to have those lags of like 3 seconds. Here is what we went live with. So match summary and match analysis. So the match summary, think of as your like sports highlights. This is gonna give you like your best stats, your worst stats, how did you compare against your friend, against people in the match, and it's all gonna be centered around you. So like how everything was done and compared to you. So you're the center of everything. Analysis is something like, this is the coaching part. So that's when you say, how to improve my skills. So we're gonna get your, the things that we need to improve on. We're gonna go through that, through those models, and we're gonna generate the recommendation for you right there. Stat lookup is for fast things like, give me my accuracy, how many matches did I ever play, how many shots did I ever fired. So all things like that. Orders and contracts. So those things are like challenges that you have in the game. They are gonna give you special rewards. They are time-based, so they're always refreshing and you need to complete them in a certain amount of time. So you wanna keep an eye on that. So people are always looking to see what are the new orders and contracts that are available for them or how close they are from completing one of those contracts. So this is one of the cases that you might not even play in the game, and you might just go to the device and say, hey, what are the new orders that are available today? Friends. So now we can use our skill to brag to your friends that you're better than they are in Call of Duty. Because our skill is gonna find something that you're better than your friends and gonna let you know. But if they use the skill, we're always going to find something that they are better than you are. And you can also use that to check if anybody's online. So this is the type of situation that you're doing something, and you want to just log in once your friends are online. News, updates, and game events. Those are for certain things like patch notes, when Activision wants to let players know about something that happened, or like some special event in this weekend, you're gonna get like double experience. Yeah. See here, okay. So Polly, so that's how we solve the text-to-speech on demand. So Polly is a service that is available, that AWS offers that. You see the drop down there on the bottom. This is the language. So we have they support many languages. Our skill is also in many languages, thanks to that. And on the right, you see you choose your voice. So our voice is Matthew, so right there. But you can choose other voices there too. So of course they have like an API that you send, and you're going to send a voice ID. And in this case here, the voice ID is Matthew. Now you're going to notice also that this is, by the way, this is in the AWS portal. This is the Polly tool. There's two tabs, plain text and SSML. So plain text is just plain text. You send text, and they just got to read left, right, everything. And it's going to respect the commas. It's going to respect the punctuation. But you see there is not much emotion, so it feels a little bit like the Terminator is talking to you. If you really want to have like granular control of like how things are said, like slower, faster, louder, if you want to give like a longer pause, a shorter pause, you want to use SSML. So if you're familiar with HTML, it works very similar to HTML. You just have a bunch of tags, you nest things around, and you basically just need to learn like five tags, and you can do like really good stuff with five tags, but they have like a bunch of tags. You can do things like, you can control things like tomato, tomato. You can really go to like specific letters. It's really cool. So organize your content. Remember that all of that at the beginning was in my laptop. And every time somebody had to change the way the skill was saying something, it would have me to go to S3 or change a CSV file somewhere. So one of the best things that we did early in the project was like getting a CMS up. So non-technical people could be looped in the project and could start working in parallel in all those different ways to answer people's questions. We have static and dynamic content. So static content is something that is never going to change, of course. This is something like you're asking about a specific character in the game or a specific weapon in the game. Dynamic content is like usually like user-based stuff. So your accuracy is going to be always changing because you're playing, so it's going to be always changing. The natural language generation. So all our models output stuff like 112, they're like this comma separated stuff. And in the end, on the other side, we have like, hey, good job winning. So we have this templating system that we find, for example, 10 ways to say, hey, good job winning. And another 10 ways to say, your best stat was X. Every time we make a request to our through our APIs, it's gonna randomly pick one of those 10 here, one of those 10 here, and boom, you have like 100 different type of responses. And then you just chain that like 8, 9 times, and you have like a huge amount of variation. So your skill is gonna sound very different every single time.
So guys, you can imagine, that's a whole lot of complexities added to our systems and solutions. So I'm kinda gonna go over our architecture and how it's changed and how it's gone from a V1 to a V2 along this journey. Here's a quick review of what we saw previously. This is our V1 architecture. Very straightforward. You know, you have your data source, you have your applications, you have your database, you have your front end, and your REST endpoint. Pretty straightforward stuff. And that's not going to quite cut it for all of the new features and models that we need to support now. So to begin with, we'll start with architecture V2. We still source all of our data from our central data services event pipeline. We have the pipeline readers. We still have the same Python readers, but we have new Java readers now too. And they all write to the distributed NoSQL data mart as well. On the other side of the diagram, We have our same REST API endpoint. It's a good starting point of any application. We still support the mycallofduty.com portal, but we've added the companion app as well as the Call of Duty Alexa skill, the Lambda function down there. So the Lambda function that we did for our skill, we kind of pared it down quite a bit. We originally created a really big Lambda function that had everything built into it, but have found the kind of the iteration process that we have to go through it, we kind of had to pull that back into our back end a bit. So we kind of pared down our Lambda to just mainly call our API. From there, as you can, the amount of data that we need now versus what we did before has expanded exponentially. In order to give these personalized recommendations, we need to know the loadouts that you're using. So not just your kills, deaths, your win-loss ratio. We actually need really, really deep information about your match. So we added a cooler data path to our pipeline readers to S3. So we have a hot data path going into our NoSQL data mart, and we have a cool path into our S3 data mart as well. We only store a certain amount of days within our NoSQL database because, well, that costs a lot of money to store hot data. So we have the S3 there backed, and that doesn't cost very much to store a lot of data. So if your data doesn't exist in our database, we just fall back to S3. Might take an extra second, you know, or two, maybe, I think we calculate like 600 milliseconds or something. The data is there. To support all the data, the machine learning applications, it kind of pulls its data from the NoSQL data mart, and it falls back to S3, like I was saying. Kind of to mash the two together, we added something called a content coordinator. The content coordinator takes the output of the machine learning application, combines it, and it accesses the language generator and delivers that content to the REST API endpoint. So you saw the 112 comma separated value. That's the output of the machine learning model. That goes into our language generator, and then the content itself gets pushed down to the API endpoint. Then we need to support Poly as well. So we added a Poly coordinator. This Poly coordinator takes the output from the content coordinator, uses the Amazon Poly API in order to generate the custom MP3s and stores it to S3, and we have a CloudFront CDN on top of that, which those URLs get delivered to the Alexa device through the skill by the REST API endpoint. Whew. Okay, so there's a lot of things going on in that picture. One of the subtle differences that you'll see here is the icon has changed a little bit. So we're not using EC2 instances anymore. We went all in on Docker and ECS. So everything we have is ECS, it's all Docker images, and we actually created a whole DevOps pipeline to support this infrastructure. So I'm gonna walk through that a little bit now. So our DevOps pipeline consists of two major pieces. So we have our DevOps framework, Git scripts, like we have Python scripts and CloudFormation templates, well, templates of a template that get merged together. And then we have the actual application-specific settings within each application repo. So you saw each one of those boxes as a separate application. They have their own settings that are unique, and then the DevOps scripts kind of glues it all together. So then we have a automated build system. So whenever a developer checks in their code, our build system kicks off, builds the Docker image, and puts it into ECR. And it's just there, ready to be deployed. The same automated build system also has deploy jobs, which actually does the work. It pushes the images, you know, into ECS from the ECR registry. It configures any application load balancers if necessary for the application. And it also does any Route 53 entries that are required. Most of the services that we do now are microservice-based, so they're all REST-based. All of those ECS clusters that we have a load balancer in front of them, and their own specific internal Route 53 domain name, and this framework configures it all in one fell swoop. To do that, I'm gonna show you some configuration files. This is the meat and potatoes of what actually goes into an application. I'm not gonna show you the DevOps scripts, that's our fun. but the actual application config files. So here's a couple examples of what we kind of built out that the developers manage themselves. On the left, you have a cluster YAML configuration file. On the right, you have an actual application YAML file. A application repo will have one cluster configuration per environment. So you'll have like a dev, a prod, a stage, a QA, whatever environment you want. You have a single cluster YAML. And then you could have one or more application YAML files. So for example, if you had a Java application with an Nginx front end, you could set them up as separate application YAMLs, deploy them separately, and scale them separately as well, all within one system. One thing to note, the cluster YAML on the left, we kind of abstracted out a couple settings so developers don't need to worry about, you know, how much memory is needed for their application. So they can set their instance type, you know, C4, 2x large. There needs to be some knowledge of what those are, but it's very minimal, as well as load balancer settings, schema, the scheme, whether it's internal or public, as well as what domain name is actually the application load balancer listens on. So we have our own private domain name, and that gets put into there, and they could create their own domain name, and that gets configured in the cluster. In terms of the application configuration file, I want to go quickly because I'm kind of running out of time, but I wanted to point out a few things that we've done here to abstract it out of developers needing to actually know the guts of what ECS is. The main thing is you'll see the tasks per node setting. That's something that we've added that does an automatic calculation of your container memory and CPU reservation on every deployment. Yeah, so it kind of puts the bumpers up for anyone deploying anything that they don't deploy a 10 gig container on a 5 gig instance, which if anyone has done ECS, it'll just sit there and spin and spin and spin, and then alarms will raise and we have to fix it. We have to go into stack. Anyways, that's, you guys know about that. So that's pretty much our configuration files. So I'm gonna turn it over to Diego again.
Okay, thank you, Mike. So playtest. So we have like some machine learning models working. We had a CMS, we have an architecture V2, and so we have like an almost final product. We have some little bugs here and there, but we wouldn't have like to see how this thing would behave in the wild, right? Because until now, it was only people in the team using or people in the company using. We wanted to look some real players, how they would react to that call of the skill that we were building for them. So long story short, it went terrible. Did not go so well. So, and I recommend you to start one ASAP and do more and more later. So we had this guy coming in, and he would moderate all those sessions. A lot of people came, all different type of backgrounds. So they would play a Call of Duty match, and then we'd let them know about what the skill was about. And people would just freeze. They wouldn't know like what to ask. They wouldn't know. We would go to them like, so how would you ask if you want to know this certain stat? Like people would just know. So 99% of the sessions were people asking, what is Call of Duty? And we have built all of that, and people didn't use any of that. It's hard to discover features. So even the people that were actually like using the Alexa, the skill correctly, they had problems exploring. And after a session, we would ask them like, oh, so what type of intents, what type of like features did you like the most? We could only recall like one or two intents. It was really hard for them to know that there's more is available. Because remember, there's no menu, like there's nothing for you to tinker, like to tap. So there's just this one device there looking at you. And we were really, really, really ambitious about how to design our dialogues. So we created like those fancy funnels that people would start with like some generic question, and it would just move into something more specialized, and then it would get their match recommendation, then it would end up somewhere like they're getting information about a specific basic training or a specific weapon. Like, users did not follow any of that. So they would just jump in, make three very unrelated questions, start three funnels, and you just jump out. So it was terrible. And there's this case of this guy that just walked in and asked, what is my groove? All right, what are you supposed to do when something like that happened? How are you supposed to answer this question? So the skill builder model does a really good job in finding slightly different variations of the examples that you gave and map to the correct intent. But in this case, there was nothing close to what is my groove. So what happened here, he just gave you gave him his match summary. So I don't know if there was the best user experience there. So dialogue tips. So how do you solve some of those problems? So be proactive. So we designed a flow that you get your question answered, and you would hint about some other feature that we're also offering. So your X is 10. Do you want to hear how to improve? You have the best accuracy among your friends. Do you want me to check if your friends are online? So the user could just say yes, and you just start the next intent right away. But if they say no, it's OK, because at least they know that they can do something about their friends in the future, and they can do something about how to improve. OK. So intent design tip. So after you start having a lot of intents and a lot of examples, you need to step back and see because remember that the model is going to map things for you, right? So slightly different sentences are going to be mapped to the certain intent. So here's an example of two different questions. They look similar, but they are very different. So what does the quartermaster have today? So the quartermaster is this character that gives you the orders and the contracts, what you're keeping track of. And what is the quartermaster? You're asking, who is this character? In our case, both of the examples were being mapped to the same intent, which is wrong. So you need to really organize your intents in a way that there's no conflict like that. These are a really hard thing to fix, but the way we fix that, we add like a slot in the end. So for example, today, we're like this list that we have like the word today, now, available. So whenever somebody would say, what and quartermaster and finish with like one of those words from the list, you would just map to the first one, to the first example, and the right intent would be triggered. If you don't fulfill the slot, the second example triggers, and then we go to this, you go to the right intent right there. So really take advantage of the slot and keep them organized. You don't want to have the same word in multiple slot lists. And most of the problems can be fixed with just getting more examples. So don't go there and just put like 5 examples or 10 examples of like how this intent is going to be triggered. We're talking about hundreds right now. So if you get a lot of them, things work really well. That's when the model really kicks in the performance. It anticipates bad queries and design like a story response. So that's the what's my group situation. Like somebody could just walk to your skill and say, ask something about the space shuttle, or ask something about like some rumor that I just read online. So you need to have like a catch-all intent for all those cases. And it's better to say something, sorry, this is not available, sorry, could ask that again in a different way, than just give like the wrong response, like we happened the what's my groove question that we told them his match summary. So here's the release. So hundreds of thousands of different response. Things of this chaining trick that we did. We have like 44 different types of intents on release. So a lot of stuff supported. Multi-platform support. So this was a big deal that we could support all of them, PSN, PSBox, Xbox Live, anything you use. So you could ask about your friends, get your data. So nobody was left behind. So this is really cool. And people that did reuse the skill, they did like it. And we see they come back. That was really cool. So from these people, we could see that we have like a really good positive reaction from them. So here, some of the community response. So as of now, like what is that, 3.5 stars? We have like a lot of good reviews. Here's more acting for you guys. So here's the second trailer. So this trailer is here because now that you guys went through all of this journey with us, now you guys, again, can tie everything together. You guys can appreciate everything that happens in the background, how all those pieces are tied together. Alexa, how did I do in my last match?
Let me break it down for you. Looks like you were in Team Deathmatch. On the V2 map, you destroyed him. Let the record show, you were in first place on your team.
How do I compare against my friends?
Sure thing. Let's see how your friends did. Your KD ratio is 1.2. So of all your friends, you're first. And the average is 0.82.
Is anybody online right now?
Six of your friends are online. Two are playing Call of Duty.
So, this thing live, like I said, so we have to go bigger right now. So what do we have in mind right now? What is in our roadmap? So we have like all those things that we couldn't support from the start, or all those ideas that we can improve, all those new features. So here are some ideas that we have right now that we're studying what we should release for the next game. Because again, this is for World War II, and this year's game is Black Ops 4. We could add screen support, we could add better recommendations, much more content. So 22 intents were left out from the release. Cannot say what they are, but they might make it. And the new game has this thing, the blackout mode. You guys should look it up. I actually have a trailer of the blackout game mode. I'm gonna have to skip it because we're running out of time. Because I want to give the mic back to Mike. So we just skip it.
Yeah, I'll skip it. So. This was part of the end of the trailer, but we'll just go right through it. Blackout, real quick, one life, random loadouts, much bigger maps. You choose your landing location, circle closing. Everyone probably in here has played Fortnite before or some sort of battle royale, PUBG. This is the Call of Duty Blackout is the Black Ops take of the battle royale. But I just wanted to say thank you to Diego. I want to give a quick shout out to him, all of his models. I've played Call of Duty pretty much every single title I've played. And when World War II came out, I was struggling pretty bad on one of the maps. And I was going in there with an assault rifle, and I just couldn't make any headway on the map. And I was one of the initial testers. You know, I was doing all the infrastructure. I was one of the initial testers for the skill. And, you know, it's like, you know, hey, Alexa, ask Call of Duty, how'd I do? And, well, it said I did terrible, and you should try this weapon. And it was one weapon that I never even thought that I would use before. And I started using it, and my KD ratio went way up for that map, and I really appreciate what the work that he's done with it. And with that, I want to bring Drew back on to talk about resources.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Diego. So, as promised, what would you do if you want to replicate this experience? We talked about the Alexa framework. It's basically broken down into two main components. One is a skills kit, which is what Diego and Mike just talked about. It basically allows you to create the skills, allows, you know, for the natural language processing, the automated speech recognition. That's where you create the intents. Then there's the other part, which is called Alexa Voice Service. That allows you to deploy your skill into devices like such as the Echo, or maybe you could create a toy, which is internet connected, and you can embed a skill within that toy. There's lots of examples where gaming companies are doing that. So when you combine the two, there's an opportunity to create a whole bunch of unique experiences. So we've talked about one kind of example, but there's a lot of different ways that you can use Alexa to create different kinds of games. If you explore the Alexa skill set, you'll find, you know, major categories of games like, you know, there's quiz-based games where you ask a question and then you solicit answer or you do fill in the blanks. There's trivia type of games where you just, you know, have multiple choice questions and then you learn how to keep a score. You can leverage leverage physical displays to create adventure games. So if you have something like an Echo Show or a device that has a screen, you can create, you know, different kind of paths and follow, you know, an adventure kind of game like Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? Or a simple game could be a decision tree where you ask a series of questions to arrive at a certain conclusion. But you don't have to do it alone or from scratch. We actually have repositories and examples, fully-fledged examples of all these kind of games to get you started. So if you go to the GitHub repo for Alexa Gaming, you'll find an example of all these kind of games to just get started. It will allow you to create intents. It will allow you to, you know, experiment. And then if you look at the full URL, you know, we have examples for Node.js. We actually also have examples for other languages like Java, C Sharp, Python. So whatever your language of choice is, you can, you know, fork the repo, get started, and then, you know, when you're ready, you know, go to the developer portal. You'll find tons and tons of documentation. These examples that I just talked about are also available straight from the repo. There's forums, and then you also have access to resources if you want to send us an email, you know, contact us, you know, reach out to business development. This is a really, really good place to get started. And then you can start customizing that experience, right? You hook it up with your big data pipeline, your machine learning pipeline, and then start creating more predictive responses. So, you know, we're out of time. Thank you so much. You know, have a wonderful reInvent. Enjoy your week. And if you have any questions, Diego, Mike, and I will be outside. Thank you so much.